Get right up on stage, get Mr. Zadelton himself to give an update on Seeker Network upgrade on the not too distant horizon. Very exciting. Red, how we doing?
Doing good. It's a beautiful day here. Been a productive morning, highly caffeinated. So got the energy I need for this.
In Minnesota, it was rainy out yesterday, and I felt like I felt that camaraderie with all the Dubai tweets, all 5,000 of them.
Oh my gosh, that was so crazy to see. Like, the streets completely flooded with water. Not exactly something I would expect from Dubai.
Yeah, no, that was pretty. It was pretty shocking. I enjoyed the content the first like 10 tweets, and then I was like, "All right, guys, we get it. It's raining."
Yeah, I feel bad for all the contributors I work with who live much more north than I do. I've been doing yard, like I've been mowing my lawn for almost 2 months now.
Wow, that is a flex. I'll have to come visit you sometime. I gotta get to some warmer waters. Like I put my foot in a lake the other day. And I just got flashbacks to winter. Like, even like not snow on the ground anymore, the water is still telling me it's cold in winter, even though it's not.
Honestly, as weird as it might sound, mowing my lawn is, like, very therapeutic for me. Like, that's a really nice break from work.
Do you, like, listen to podcasts or music while you mow, or are you just,
yep.
like...
Generally, I'll listen to podcasts, but also... Sometimes I just like being out there in the silence, just enjoying the sound of the engine and birds.
That's beautiful. I end up listening to like Laura Shin and the Unchained podcast is the go-to for me. Always a good vibe. You got to know what's going on in Ethereum land. There's always something going on over there to be learned from. Like you thought even Cosmos has drama. I mean, like, talk about like Aave versus MakerDAO drama. Talk about like European founders having drama with each other. There's all sorts of like crazy stuff.
Yeah, Uniswap, you know, being, what is it? Are they being sued by the SEC?
I mean, the SEC just sues everyone. I just assume that is the default case.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Welcome to the stage. How we doing? Welcome, welcome. You're on mute, sir.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
We can. Good to hear your voice.
Awesome.
How's the travel?
Yeah,
back?
Same here.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I've been everywhere. Right. It wasn't pretty amazing. I was at two events last week. I was at Paris Blockchain Week and also at ETHDAM, which was kind of a privacy-oriented event. You know, met a lot of people there, really talking about DCC to everyone and getting some interest, also some good potential contacts for the future. There was a hackathon in ETHDAM, so there were some teams that will maybe potentially we can get them work with us in the future. ETHDAM was kind of dominated by Oasis. So they sent a lot of like a very big team there. But actually our team also managed, Alex Saturn managed to get into the top 10 with his team. So that was pretty cool in the hackathon. So, you know, a lot of stuff going on. I think people are generally bullish on DCC, on privacy, confidential computing in general. the more I talk to people, the more I realize and also make them realize that if we really want this whole industry to become real for real and address really millions of people or billions of people, we need some sort of data protection. It just won't scale. It just won't scale, you know, without some privacy, right? I mean, we here understand that very well. The people out there, they still, you know, some people still think that when they do something on Ethereum, then it's kind of secret, not visible, bullshit, right? And also, if people do just one or two transactions a month, then they also don't care. But once they start working more like professionally and start moving more and more of their stuff to on chain, right, they realize that this transparency is problematic. You know, it was funny, I talked to a company building a product for DeFi trading strategies, right? And they're doing this on Ethereum, I think. And they say, well, we will have those trading gurus and people will pay money to follow their trades. And then I say, well, you guys realize, right, that all of their trades are on chain, right? So there is like maybe there will be some people who will pay them, but, you know, basically everything can be just seen for free. So your product will not really work once more than three people are using it and say, oh yeah, let's talk, let's see how we do it with secret. And other people doing, you know, banks, you say, oh, first non-custodial bank on chain, so people will store their funds with us and make payments. I say, well, you know, how will they feel when they realize everything they do is just observable immediately? So yeah, it's a problem. So I think our narrative is strong and getting stronger. And it's now up to us and up to this coalition that we built of other projects in the space to really amplify that. So yeah, I came back reassured and encouraged.
Yeah, you guys have, you so and cool. You and Saturn have been absolutely crushing it on the conference circuit. I know there's a whole bunch of other people that are contributing, making all these events and these hackathon presences really powerful and meaningful, but you guys have been crushing it. I know there's a few different hackathons that Secret's been participating in or helping out with mentoring. And if I'm not mistaken, most, if not all of them had projects that were like part of the winners or like top 10 that were using Secret VRF or, you know, some other sort of part of Secret's tech stack.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Secret VRF, I think they got like there were three hackathons where Secret VRF project got the first place. I think it was in Denver, in Bucharest, and somewhere else. And here in Amsterdam, they were not VRF, they were just using Secret for quadratic voting. So everything was like all the data was collected and passed to Secret, and the voting happened there. So yeah, and they were in top 10. They didn't get the first place, but they were in top 10, and it was a big hackathon. They were like maybe 80 projects, really big. So top 10 is a great achievement. So yeah, and it's you know, it's fun. It's tiring, but it's a lot of fun, you know, seeing all the people. There were in Amsterdam, there were some of the privacy OGs, you know, the original cypherpunks, like this guy Amir Taki and this guy Soleimani as well, who are, you know, very, very hardcore privacy. Taki is building DarkFi, which is a cypherpunk chain using all of the privacy technologies together. So there was this old rebellious privacy vibe there that was very cool. I remembered my, you know, old days when I was doing Beam, and you know, this narrative was everywhere. Now it's not so common to see those people, but it was intense and interesting and great overall.
I think I saw that. Was David Cham was there as well, I think.
Oh yeah, David. Yeah, David was there as well. I mean, he's a legend, right? So last time I saw him at a conference was in 2018, I think. and he was here now telling his story, you know. Well, it was kind of more entertaining, and history looking like backwards how this all started, but it was great, you know, and people applauded him, you know, like a demigod there. Yeah, because he is presumably one of the guys who started the whole
thing. Yeah, I mean, he's the godfather of blockchain. Yeah. Back in 1977, his dissertation arguably it outlined every single concept of blockchain except proof of work. Like, essentially, like, Satoshi came in and added on that component, which was kind of the final piece of the puzzle to make a live in production blockchain workable and resilient. So, but David Cham doesn't get enough credit, in my opinion, for the legwork that was laid. But I'm glad people there recognized him as a legend, because he absolutely is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people love him. Yeah.
Well, to circle back now, Red, we'll hand the floor to you. We got some exciting stuff to dive into today. And I also just want to give a shout out and thank you to everyone in the audience or anyone tuning into the recording. Just really an honor to be able to have Alex Adelson from Secret Labs being able to talk about the future of Secret Network and what's been worked on and what's on the horizon. So, Red, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you very much, Carter. And yeah, I just want to reiterate what Carter said. Really appreciate, Alex, you being here. Appreciate everyone in the audience joining us today and anyone listening in. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. We're going to be talking about the upcoming Secret Network upgrade, and what this means for decentralized applications leveraging Secret Network smart contract or Secret smart contracts and the network as a whole. So before we kind of dive into this conversation, for anyone who wants to, you know, follow along with some of the discussion points for the upgrade highlights we'll be talking about, I would suggest going and checking out Secret Labs Twitter. There's a Twitter thread on this upgrade that should be pinned at the top of their profile. So you should be able to find the Secret Labs profiles, SCRT_labs. And you should be able to, you know, see that Twitter thread, and it'll highlight a lot of the discussion points we're going to be talking about today. Let's go ahead and dive in. Alex, do you want to kind of walk us through some of the main highlights, main things that are going to be included in this upcoming network upgrade?
Let's talk about the upgrade. It's actually going on right now as we speak. Maybe some of you here are in the testnet validators group. So we had the first attempt today, and there were some things that were missing, so we're working to fix them, and we'll continue tomorrow. So this is the first upgrade led by Vlad Gelfer, who is our new core developer, who actually developed this whole thing. We might be hitting some snags, but we have all the other guys on the team, you know, helping him out. Asaf and Nitzig, they're all there, kind of helping him to do this. So the upgrade basically is, it's just one simple thing. And that thing is enabling the decap attestation. So let me maybe explain what attestation is before I go forward. So on Secret Network, right, we have validators. And the validators run... computers run machines that have Intel SGX, and those machines need to run our code, right? They need to run Secret Network nodes. Now, our network is permissionless, right? So anyone can join, but when somebody tries to join, there is this process of that apply to it, right? Because we don't want to malicious. So we need to make sure, and this is like just making sure that the machine is right, to validate that the machine is running sort of code that pretends to be our Secret Network node and information to a file or whatever. Now, the attestation, everything that touches machines and the actual...
Alex, you're cutting out a little bit.
Developed and supported. And up until now, we were using their... Ski likes those complex acronyms. Yeah. So Yeah, is everyone can hear me, right?
You're sounding better now.
Yeah, it was in and out for every like 5 or 6 seconds. You're kind of popping in and out.
Not gonna lie though, I was on the edge of my seat though. You had me hooked with these with these like 5 second bits.
Okay, sorry about that. Twitter doesn't really love me. I'm having those issues from time to time. So again, I was talking about the EPID attestation. That is the old scheme. And the new one is called DCAP, Data Center Attestation Primitives. And the great thing for us is that this new attestation supports new generations of processors, right? So up until now, I think we were working only with first and second generation of Xeon processors. And now we should be able to work with the third, the fourth, and the fifth, which means the validators can upgrade to much more powerful machines and then hopefully even reduce the costs because, you know, fewer machines will be needed to run everything. So that's the main goal of the upgrade. So it's one single feature. Well, we also added a couple of very small fixes. There was an IBC Go patch that we performed an emergency upgrade for, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. And there was another small fix, which is not very meaningful. But the main thing is DCAP. And, you know, we're now working on that and, you know, going through the testnet upgrade. And then once it's done, we'll go on mainnet, I guess, 2-3 weeks from now. And that will be it. And then we will be really able to slowly upgrade. The validators will be able to slowly upgrade all the machines. And then hopefully we also can increase the throughput of the network because the machines are just more powerful. So that's basically the story of DCAP.
Awesome. That was a really awesome overview of what DCAP is and some of what we're going to see as a result of the implementation of this. You know, from an end user perspective, or maybe someone who's running infrastructure, supporting DApps or supporting the network, what sort of performance updates, how would people be able to kind of feel the difference in the performance? Is it something that users would really feel, or is it more like developers and those running infrastructure that would be able to tell the difference?
I think it's mostly the people who are running the infrastructure that will be benefiting from this. So again, they will just be able to get newer machines and get just more performance from those machines. I don't think it will speed up the chain, but maybe, you know, if they're running something else on those machines, then they will be able to do multiple things in parallel. I guess the processors will just run, I guess, with lower power consumption and all, you know, all the benefits of just upgrading to a newer computer, newer computers, newer processors. So it all should run smoother with time.
Yeah, I'm not a technical individual or someone that really messes with infrastructure that much, but I've seen at least some pictures of like the difference in size and power of the third gen processor third gen processors versus some of the other like enterprise second gen processors. And yeah, just from looking at it from my sort of pleb perspective, definitely could see how it's going to reduce costs for those running the actual infrastructure, which should hopefully make it a little bit more sustainable for other DApps to be able to leverage the necessary nodes to do whatever it is that they're needing to do.
One
thing that I'm curious about, I know I'm curious about it. I would imagine that others are curious, but you had mentioned, the need to do this upgrade on testnet first. I'm curious what all goes into the technical planning for an upgrade. Like, I'm sure most people just think about the actual code changes, but there's a whole lot more to just changing the source code and shoving out a software upgrade. So kind of curious just to give a high level explanation of like what that process is planning for an upgrade.
Yeah, so actually this upgrade is one of the more complex because there are some upgrades when it's really just about changing the code when it's a small change or a very local change, and then it's very easy. Right? Now, in this particular, definitely not like this. Right? So in this particular upgrade, this decap attestation requires some other components to be installed on the machine, some of them coming from Intel, some newer SGX drivers and newer SGX SDK. So this requires the operator first to prepare the machine by installing all this necessary software. And there are, I think, five or six different things that need to be installed. And then actually some of the problems that we ran into is that some of the different everybody has a different version of their Linux operating system and different versions of software. So there are some bumps there on the road where some of those like infrastructure low-level upgrades are not exactly working as expected. So we need to go back and fix. And also so this is like one level of complexity in this particular upgrade, that the machine itself needs to be upgraded. In some cases, the operating system needs to be upgraded. In some cases, just the drivers and newer SDKs from Intel. So there is like multiple things that need to be installed before the upgrade even works. Right. And now, besides that, I think there is a change in the way the data is encrypted on between the previous version and the new one. So the data needs to be re-encrypted in a way, which is also like kind of a painful process. And it takes some more time, right? So we need to take the old state of the chain, bring it up to into the enclave and re-encrypt it so that the new Intel SDK can work with it. So there is like another level of complexity there, and that's because this new decap attestation requires this new Intel SDK, which has some sort of a different encryption paradigm there. So it's probably one of the more complex upgrades, but we're braving it, and we will see this happening in the coming days. Hopefully we can finish it next week, if not early sorry this week or early next week, because we have amazing testnet validators. These people are super passionate but also super patient, right? And they're helping out because they have to they have they're hitting all those bumps. Because when we do something in the lab, we try it on, three, four, five different types of machines. But then, when we go out to actual validators, then they might have a slightly different environment there, and they're hitting all kinds of problems. But they are very patient, and they are following up with the team. So it's there are bumps, but it's okay. There are always bumps, and we're not afraid of bumps. So we're just doing that.
That's awesome. I really appreciate all that information. I'm very curious individual. I always like hearing what goes on behind the scenes, and I think it gives a level of appreciation for kind of what's going on for the layer one core development team.
I mean, that's why it's a difficult profession, right? To be a core developer, because you have to think about all kinds of different configurations you can meet in the wild. All the machines are different, and also the stakes are very high, right? You don't want to screw up the mainnet, so you need to do the testnet upgrade first and do it really well and test out a lot of things. So we'll be spending a lot of time there. And a lot of effort, to make this to iron this out and to make sure it goes smooth on the mainnet when it's ready.
Yeah, and somewhat related to what you're talking about with you know, some of the things that as a core developer you have to think about and consider. You know, my mind immediately as we're thinking about decap, I can't help but think about how decap plays into some of the other items on the 2024 roadmap. I remember listening in to the presentation you gave, maybe it was at the end of 2023 or right at the beginning of 2024, highlighting the 2024 roadmap. If you were there listening to that, you definitely recognize that decap was a part of this 2024 roadmap. But I'm curious, how does this current upgrade, you know, the empowering of the usage of these next generation Intel processors and the use of decap, how does this better empower the Secret network as a whole and like the dApps built on top of Secret in the future? Or maybe potentially, how does it connect into the rest of the roadmap? Like what else does it set the groundwork for?
Sure. So first, it will potentially increase the scalability, right? So we will be able to potentially increase the gas limit, maybe to make it possible to execute more transactions or more complex transactions in one block, just because once 66% of the validators are running more powerful machines, then we can make, we can squeeze more into one block. Right. So this is like one thing that's definitely there. Another thing is that, you know, we're planning on the roadmap, we have plans for EVM support. Right. And the way it looks that is that in the beginning, the EVM or EVMs will be running in parallel to the existing Cosmos environment. And again, that would require computing resources, right? So the more powerful machines will allow us doing that efficiently, you know, whereas the older machines are, you know, maybe we'll have a hard time running those two different or maybe three different runtimes in parallel. So that's also very important. And, you know, in general, it is time to upgrade, right? The world does not stand in the same place. We need to move forward. We need to bring more newer hardware on Secret Network. So in a way, this upgrade is kind of a necessary step that we needed to do anyway, just because you cannot just stay behind. But it opens up just more powerful things, and especially running EVM in parallel to the existing Cosmos.
Yeah, and I guess one other thing I was just thinking about is that this is also beneficial for like better decentralized provisioning of nodes. You know, if you can support more generations of processors, it's probably easier for any current or potential node providers in the future to be able to more easily provision those and scale those as well.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I know that most of our validators just own their machines, so they buy them, they don't rent them. Just because it's not economic Azure or somewhere else. But I think still those newer machines will be easier to come by. And maybe even cheaper, you know, although they're more powerful, but maybe the older ones are becoming more expensive with time. So it should play in the way of decentralization as well.
Yeah. So I kind of want to shift gears here just for a minute to a slightly tangential topic, but it is important in relation to the future of Secret Network and how the core development team interacts with builders on the dApp layer. And I just want to share a kind of perspective as from a Shade contributor in relation to working with Secret Labs. And I have some questions for Carter and for you, Alex, in relation to this. So I first just want to say, you know, from my perspective, it's been really wonderful working with Slabs, sharing all the feedback we received from users, from our own analytics and observations over the past 4 months as we've gotten into 2024. And it's been very encouraging to see core development team for the network be so responsive to these suggestions and inquiries for solutions to particular problems that DApps are facing. The first thing I want to kind of ask you, Carter, is that when we as DApp builders, DApp contributors, think about the relationship between the core layer one development team and the teams of DApp builders on a smart contract platform, what sort of critical information sharing responsibilities do you think lie on the DApps? And maybe to say this another way is, like, what information do you think DApps can provide to core layer one teams like Secret Labs to better inform decision-making and roadmap planning for network improvements?
It's a really good question, Red. I think that at the end of the day, it's all about what's filling blocks. Where is the demand actually coming from? So I think there's kind of two pieces of the puzzle here. One, I think the onus is kind of on the DApps to be able to have analytics and be able to kind of like point out and prove where demand is coming from, because I think that's super helpful for the layer one team to be able to focus on helping cultivate those specific use cases. And in the situations where we're not seeing usage, trying to kind of like puzzle it out and figure out why that demand maybe isn't there. So yeah, like tight communication around what's actually being used. And then I think the second one is like, why aren't things being used? What friction points exist that a DApp can't solve that maybe the layer one can help solve? There's like pros and cons in both directions. A lot of times DApps have the ability to sidestep friction that comes from the layer one tech stack, but also there's some situation where it makes sense where so many DApps are suffering from the same problem or the same like user story friction with like using Secret Network, that it makes sense to like work with the layer one team to like define a standard and to help, you know, continue to push the needle forward so it's easier for people to use Secret Network DApps. So as a whole, everyone has blind spots, and that's why teamwork is so powerful, right? We like the DApp layer is not aware of the infrastructure and technical limitations of Secret Network to the degree that Secret Labs does, right? Like they are the absolute experts. They live and breathe kind of the lowest level of the Secret Network stack. At the same time, Secret Labs isn't necessarily like talking with, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of consumers on a daily basis that the DApps are. So as opposed to operating in silos and assuming that people can operate without the other, it's been really encouraging to me really since January of this year to see a lot more of that tight collaboration, to just have this healthy communication where DApps are very open about their needs. And Secret Labs has been super open about the roadmap and what's possible, what's achievable, and on what time horizon. I think the relationship between the DApp layer and Secret Network is in the best place it's ever been since really its inception. So,
well, Carter, thanks for the kind words. To me, it's very natural and very clear that a network without apps is not very useful. And I totally agree that, you know, we see kind of different sides of the elephant or of the apple or whatever. Specifically we can talk about the latest discussion that we had with you guys about the permits. When I started using Secret, you know, when I, you know, started, you know, joining the whole thing, you know, and I realized that, you know, having this viewing key per coin is super annoying. And I even put it in the roadmap. I don't remember blanket permit or something like that. I don't know if it was in the public roadmap, but I do have it like as an item in the internal roadmap for sure. And this conversation was super helpful because, you know, and you guys did a great analytic work to understand why the people are not using the product as much as we would want them to. And this inconvenience is, yeah, I'm sure it is annoying. You know, the fact that you have to click this add key for every coin that you want to use, and then you make a swap, and then you don't see the coin in your wallet and so on. So it's super annoying, and we need to find a good way to create this blanket permit so that one click will allow an application to see all of my SNP 20 coins just once. And then there is, so that's one problem that we will be addressing, and you know, we have some time to do that, right? So hopefully somewhere in the summer we'll be able to do that. By the way, there will be a very interesting upgrade to the SNP 20 that we will bundle together with this one, and it's improved privacy of the coins, and it will be done as part of our grants program. There is a very interesting idea. It's called delayed write buffers. So we're not, you know, talking too much about how exactly it will work, because it, you know, the work still has to be done. But bottom line is that all the side channel attacks will mostly fail. And it's a very serious improvement to our privacy. And it's kind of transparent to everyone. So dApps will not need to do anything to enable this. We'll just upgrade the token contract, and it will just work out of the box. So these are the this is like one of the upgrades that is driven by dApp developer feedback in a way, right? Specifically by Shade, right? So we need this blanket permit to work. That's one thing. And another thing that we discussed was the encryption and decryption of transactions. And this may be even a tougher nut to crack, but we will do some thinking, and I'm sure we'll find a good way so that a user can all, I mean, as long as they remember, as they have access to their private key, so that they are able to encrypt their transactions, decrypt their transactions, but also to change the transaction encryption key. And the idea is very simple, right? So let's say I have a bookkeeper or an auditor, and then I can give them a key so that they can view all my transactions up till now, let's say up till whatever, March 1st, 2024. But then maybe I'm not sure I want to work with them the next year, so I will just change my key on March 2nd, and then I will not give that guy the key. I will give it to another guy a year later. Or maybe to the same guy, right? But that will give me a way to encrypt my transactions so that I can kind of revoke access from somebody. I would not be able to revoke access to the past, but I can revoke access going forward. And that allows like normal operations and normal relationship between a person and, say, their auditor or something like that. So that's also a very important upgrade and a very interesting cryptographical problem to address, and that's what we'll do. We will address it. So these are the SNP 20 and the transaction encryption upgrades. They actually came out of this conversation, and we will continue those conversations, right? Both with Shade and other dApps on chain, and we are building more dApps now with grants program and with partnerships and more. Hopefully we'll have many more join the network by this year. And yeah, I think it's, as Carter said, it's super important to collaborate on this, because it's a symbiotic relationship, right? We in the end, we are together providing something valuable to the users, and the better the thing is, the better for all of us. And yeah, we need different viewpoints, different angles of seeing this user experience and various aspects of the chain operation. And I am very grateful for Shay to, you know, to working with us and sharing this and being patient and cooperative. So the more the merrier.
Someone's got to clip that. That was bullish as all get out.
Yeah, I was about to say, damn, Alex, even I wasn't expecting this alpha today. You know, this okay. This conversation kind of brings me back to it brings me back to the ecosystem meeting we had in Denver, where we had Secret Lab, Secret Network mm-hmm. Foundation, and the ecosystem of builders, you know, that were there in Denver all together discussing how we can collectively better position ourselves in regards to narratives, user experience, network improvements. And yeah, you know, the network, the core development team of the layer one being receptive and being there to listen to these observations, listen to these considerations, you know, is really, really important. And there's all sorts of other, like, you know, there's all sorts of other things that improve when we're able to solve some of these critical, like in relation to user experience, right? For privacy, you know, being able to create this one-click privacy solution where, you know, you can see your balances of all your SNP 20s, your SNP 721s, whatever token standard you're using. You know, this makes external integrations that much more simple, where, you know, other platforms don't have to explain to their users, oh, you have to create keys for everything, and this is how you manage them, and managing this type of decryption tool is different than this type of decryption tool. And the simplification of that also makes it cheaper. So, you know, regardless of if it's Shade kind of setting the standards for what external integrations look like, or other teams paving the way in their own, you know, in their own niche, it helps us all being able to reduce the dev lift and the user experience lift, like that friction there. So this is just one improvement that I'm really, really excited about. Yeah, I just wanted to touch on that.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's an interesting problem to solve, and it's a very clear problem with a very clear benefit to the users, right? And I also care about user experience, right? Because it's very clear that people don't like friction, and people are not, a lot of people, you know, I mean, they do understand the value of privacy, of data protection, but not that much. And if it requires friction, they say, oh, you know, screw this, I'm fine just without privacy. I mean, it sounds kind of amazing to us, understanding that people are not willing to pay this little UX price to get privacy. It's a fact, right? Our experience is as good as on any other chain, or better, right? Because frankly, the UX on blockchain today sucks, right? We all know that. You know, take Ethereum, take, you know, Bitcoin, it's slow, MetaMask is sometimes inconsistent, it's it's not easy. But, you know, and adding more complexity to this, yeah, I'm sure it scares away a lot of people, and making it right will hopefully bring them back. Yeah, and will give them something without friction, and that's really the way to go.
I really like the idea of, like, if we can make it through some of these upgrades and improvements, for Secret Network to say that it's the easiest to use private UX. Like, you know, there's all these different privacy chains that are working really hard on improving privacy, but in terms of consumers and their ability to actually use them, I think it would be amazing if Secret Network can claim that title of easiest to use. Because I think when people hear privacy, inherently they think of those extra clicks of, like, oh, you got to download the VPN, got to pick a location, you know, from like a traditional Web 2 privacy standpoint. And then in Web 3, it's even worse of, oh, I have to get this specific wallet and this specific endpoint, and I got to take these, you know, 49 steps to, like, maybe feel safe, right? So if Secret Network can instead brand itself as like easy to use and really turn something that has been a weakness into a strength, I think that really differentiates it from all the other privacy platforms out there. And another interesting analogy, like in World War II, there was the, I don't know which country it was, but they had the planes that made it back that was riddled with bullet holes, and the engineers ended up putting like more plating and armor where all the bullet holes were. And then someone realized, like, wait a second, it's only the planes that made it. Like, we actually should be putting the armor in the opposite spots where the bullet holes aren't. And in many ways, I think like the Secret Network user community represents all the users that are okay with the level of friction, when really we need to be putting armor and plating on all the users that left, that aren't okay with the friction. And those are the silent voices.
Wow.
That's the consumer that you don't hear about because they tried it and they left. And that has to be our mission, is winning those people, winning those people back, or those new users that never again do they come to Secret Network and say, ah, it was too hard to use. We need to make Web3 privacy easy. And I fully believe that with the upgrades, working with Secret Labs, that by the end of the year, we will be the easiest to use private DeFi in all of crypto. And I think Secret Network is headed towards being massively differentiated from its other privacy competitors on that front.
That was a killer analogy, Carter. That was really awesome. Hit home very, very solidly.
As with those planes, you just see the planes that just... Hello?
Oh, now you're back.
Now you're back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry about that. So I love this survivor bias analogy. It's very true. We only see those planes that came back. We don't see the planes that didn't come back, right? We only see the users that stay with us, and we don't see those that just ran away immediately. And it's a very valid hypothesis that the user experience is what broke it. And you know, I think, by the way, that the reason for the first wave of privacy projects not to succeed, you know, projects like Monero, well, it did succeed, but you know, the dream was that it will replace Bitcoin or Zcash or my project Beam or Grin or Fero or a bunch of other privacy coins that seemed to be like a great idea back then, but they all had requirements for a different wallet. They were maybe slower, maybe less common user experience. They all had friction, and that friction kind of prevented them from really becoming mainstream, and maybe they won't become mainstream unless they change it, you know, they adopt the standard user experience. So I think it's super important for us to also make it, you know, as frictionless as possible, and that will not scare people away. Yeah, good stuff. Survivor basis, I'll think of it more.
Yeah, this has been an awesome conversation, and for anyone listening,
bias, not basis, bias, survivor bias, yeah, bias.
You know, you recognize we talked a lot about technical updates, technical support by the layer one, the DApp layer, just like the general layer one. But you know, these core development teams like Secret Labs, you know, also do so much more to support DApp layers. Everything from providing or supporting public infrastructure, supporting relaying efforts for DeFi sectors on their chains, supporting grant programs, helping out with DApp grant programs. And so, yeah, just as a whole, the perspective from a DApp builder, DApp contributor, this horizon for Secret Network is looking incredibly promising. I'm really excited about not only the technical improvements, but the community improvements, the ability to support devs, support users, be able to provide this privacy, not really privacy as a service, but like be able to provide this service that is privacy for data and value. In a more, like, we're meeting users, we're meeting devs closer to the middle, or closer to where they're at, rather than expecting people to be able to bridge that gap and come straight to us. Yeah, and so really, really excited for what's to come over the next few apps from the network's perspective. And then obviously Shade has, we've got our own roadmap tied into improving privacy UX, tied into improving dApp functionality, and a whole slew of different updates and improvements that we're going to see over the next, basically the foreseeable future. We're always going to be looking to improve things.
Yeah, we have some exciting upgrade announcements of our own that are starting to be formulated and getting closer to being released. We've been pretty quiet the last month, but we've been hard at work at a package / upgrade that has a code name that has been yet to be revealed and still won't be revealed on this space. But we have the next really like year and a quarter mapped out, and we're extremely excited to reveal this roadmap, as internally we've kind of realigned on our engineering kind of processes and how it feeds into the go-to-market and how we take in user feedback and how that turns into features and changes to the app. So Shade Protocol continues to mature as a set of contributors, as a community, and continue to stay tuned. So Red, I think we can open this up for Q&A. If there's any questions in the audience, feel free to request. There was one comment from Valentine. He asked, how was the Paris Blockchain Week? I think that was for you, Alex. And he asked what interesting things happened there in your opinion. And he also asked if you're in Dubai for Token 2049.
Yeah, so first of all, it was awesome because it was in Paris. I love Paris, and it's a great place to be. I told you some of the stories there of companies that I met, you know, the companies that are building those trading strategies or banking. I had several meetings there with our fellow DCC developers like iExec and Turnoa that I tweeted, and a couple more. They all are very excited about the new narrative, and we're now building like a, well, not a team, but, you know, building out this kind of a framework for us to cooperate. We're already talking about joint events, and we will soon start talking to CoinMarketCap and CoinGecko so that they introduce a DCC as a category there. And then later on, I'd love to start talking to analysts. I'm also already talking to some VCs, you know, pushing this narrative. My expectation is that by the end of this year, or maybe even earlier, maybe by the fall, we will have DCC recognized and have it like discussed and talked about by people. You know, I'd love to have a DCC index at some point, because then, you know, then we would have investors just go and buy the whole thing. Right, rather than just look for particular projects, and then when they find, let's say, when they find secret in the list of privacy coins, they say, "Oh shit, I don't like this because it's, you know, a lot of people are afraid of this. If it's DCC, then people will not be afraid of this, and people will understand that this is the future." And we're working on some content on that. So that was one part in Paris that was important to me, to meet those projects and strengthen our relationship with them. Another thing, we had a very interesting side event with ICP, Internet Computer, Definity. Maybe there will be some interest from their part to build something using secret confidential computing. What else? A lot of other meetings with, you know, potential partners. organizations that might use our confidential computing, maybe build some NFTs, maybe do some AI learning on confidential data. Also, I met several newer projects that, you know, are startups that might benefit from working with us.
Did we lose them?
I believe so. But we made it 58 minutes without any like major rugs, other than for maybe like a minute there in the middle. So yeah. I still consider this a great win.
Oh, I consider
from a Twitter space hosting perspective.
You know, including the bigger guys like Fireblocks and others. So
Alex, we lost you there for like 20 seconds, but we caught the gist of meeting up around the DCC narrative, meeting up with other partners that are coalescing around it. I think we caught the high level summary.
I don't want to say like a DCC summit or decentralized confidential computing conference sounds like something that could be really, really interesting, you know, especially as all these different technologies are starting to be used, whether it's TEEs, MPC, homomorphic encryption, being able to get all these different groups using these various privacy tech stacks would be super awesome. And to what Alex was saying, you know, being able to generate knowledge about the differentiation between, you know, just being able to have privacy for value, but the, you know, the differences between being able to have privacy for data as well. And being able to provide that level of access control for users, like that granular access control. And so, I don't know, I don't know if this is something that, you know, Secret Foundation or Network Foundation or Secret Labs has thought about, but that sounds like a phenomenal event to be organized, and hopefully other DCC providers would be, you know, interested in doing something like that as well.
I await the day for when Bankless or Laura Shin, there'll be a podcast where people cover decentralized confidential computing as a big trend in late 2024, 2025. And it won't have happened by accident, that's for sure. A lot of hard work behind the scenes to make these words and these differentiations between, you know, transactional privacy tokens versus these confidential computing layers, like creating that differentiation is a massive task. It's not easy because these are ideas that have to be split out, well categorized, well embraced, and well understood. So huge props to you, Alex, on pushing that forward. And of course, all the other contributors on Secret Network that are part of that movement. We are at the top of the hour. I unfortunately have to drop. You guys can keep going if you want, but Alex, as always, a pleasure, sir. Your commitment to transparency and communication is deeply appreciated by us at Shade and the community. And look forward to a productive next, you know, 4 or 5 months for the network.
Absolutely. My pleasure always, and thanks for having me. It's really great. This strengthens our relationship, and yeah, I'm super happy to work together and move everything forward. This is what we need to do.
And just as a reminder for anyone listening now or listening to the recording, if you want to stay up to date with everything going on with network upgrades, definitely follow the Secret Labs Twitter account, SCRT_labs. You can find current Twitter thread on what this upcoming network upgrade is going to provide. And, you know, any new information I'm sure is going to be shared on that Twitter account. And likewise for Shade, if anyone wants to keep up with anything going on at Shade, current development, upcoming initiatives, make sure to follow the Shade Twitter account. It's currently the host right there. Just click the follow button. And with that, just want to say, hope everyone has a great rest of their day. Really enjoyed this conversation. Again, thank you, Alex, and thank you to everyone who's listened in. And as we always like to say, there's plenty of room in the shade. Have a great day, guys.
Plenty of room in the shade. Bye, everyone. Thank you. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom over impossible loss. It's all moss and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of DNA stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few seats. And then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats. And if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, say and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Terror Spaces.